at the root of the fear of failure is an irrationality that's related to our identity. So a fear of failure is saying that if I fail at what I'm doing, then I am a failure, right? And that's saying that our identity isn't what we do, when that's never the case.
This is the Alchemized Life podcast, and I am your host, Ava Johanna, transformational mentor, speaker, teacher, and most importantly, a woman on a mission to bring wellness to the world. This podcast was created to bridge the gap for anyone craving more love, health, and happiness in each and every day. And with every episode, you will receive practical guidance to create magic in your own life. Combining the expertise of wellness visionaries and thought leaders, each week we will bring it back to basics and provide you with the tools meant to empower you to thrive emotionally, physically, and spiritually. So together, let's ditch the mean girl, you can't sit with us vibes, grab your favorite yoga pants, and start to find your uniquely alchemized life. You guys, I am back home in the United States and so happy because I am finally reunited with my Athletics CBD oil. I know that sounds silly, but in Bali, you can't have any types of drugs. And even though CBD is non-psychoactive, I was not able to bring my athletic CBD with me. So I am just so happy to be back home, get back into my daily CBD ritual. If you haven't heard of Athletic CBD, let me tell you guys, this is my favorite CBD company because it is so much more than just CBD. Besides having all of the benefits of CBD, like stress reduction, reduction of inflammation, helping with sleep, they also combine it with magnesium, glutamine, vitamin B, and zinc, which are all these different amazing muscle recovery supplements and vitamins that help your body to recover faster. So if you're an athlete, if you like running, if you like going to the gym, if you like practicing yoga, this is the CBD for you. And the team at Athletic CBD has been so awesome to give me a coupon code for all of you guys listening if you want to try it at home and see what I'm talking about. So you just head to athleticcbd.com and enter the code ALCHEMIZED15 for 15% off of your order. I'll drop a link in the show notes as well, but again, that is athleticcbd.com and ALCHEMIZED15 for 15% off of your order. Enjoy. Hello, beautiful people. Ava Johanna here. I am your host of the Alchemized Life podcast, and I am coming to you from LA after being in Bali for 2 weeks. Corey is not with me. Sadly, the monkeys ate him, so it's just me from here on out, which, you know, not a bad thing. Just kidding, Corey, if you're listening to this, hello. I love you. Well, happy Monday, guys. I am really excited for this episode, really excited for being back from Bali and starting to integrate back into real life and officially be up in LA and, you know, be looking for a home and prepping for the wedding. There's so much going on. I feel like it never stops, but in the most beautiful way. And I'm just really grateful to have a time where I can pause and come on here and talk with you guys, even though it's a little rhetorical at this point, but then have the conversations afterwards once the episode goes live, because I feel like over the past few weeks, we've all been going through this very, very interesting shift. It's been cool, a little emotional, a little up and down. I'm sure you're like nodding your head like, yes, yes, yes. Because there's just been a lot of change happening. And some of it's been difficult and challenging. Some of it has been really beautiful. And ultimately, I'm just grateful for all of it because it all has a place and a meaning, you know? And when we're able to kind of take ourselves outside of the shit and have that 10,000 foot view, we can see the true purpose of absolutely everything that is going on in our lives, even though sometimes it's really hard for us to see it when we're in the thick of it. So just want to let you know, I am there right with you through all of this. And again, just grateful for all the experiences. And today I wanted to chat with you guys because I'm officially back in LA, like I said, like 4 times already. And I'm really, really excited because I briefly mentioned this a couple episodes ago, but I am officially launching my group mentorship program and wanted to chat with you guys a little bit more about the program before we jump into today's episode because it's going to be so powerful and I can't wait for it. Oh, even Penny is like running up towards me right now with her little loud collar. Hey, Pen. Penny's here to say hi, everyone. If you don't know Penny, she is my cockaweenie. Yes, that is the technical name for a Cocker Spaniel Dachshund. And she's the love of my life next to Corey. And yeah, so anyways, back to my group mentorship program. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be really intimate. I'm only opening it for 8 people because I really want to create a container in which we can all get to know each other on a very, very deep level. After being at the retreat and seeing what a smaller group can do, it's just so magical. And I really want to cultivate community and cultivate community in a way where we are all supporting each other on our entrepreneurial journeys in the wellness space, because sometimes it can be very crazy. It can be very overwhelming, and it can also be so freaking beautiful. And to have your team around you is one of the most powerful things that you can cultivate for yourself. So I thought, what the heck? Let's do this. So my group mentorship program is really for the yoga teachers, the movers, the shakers in the industry that are looking to make a difference in their lives and the lives of others. So these are the wellness leaders, the spiritual leaders, the people sitting at their 9-to-5 jobs wondering and feeling like there is so much more to what they are doing and wanting to start down their path. So if that is you, and again, you are coming back to that head nod, then please, please, I encourage you to go to the show notes, click the button to apply, and see what this can be for you, because ultimately it has been so life-changing to work with my one-on-one clients. And essentially the group mentorship program is just a extended version of that. So as far as the technical goes, you're learning all of the tools for launching your own business, launching your own brand, the social media, the acceleration of your brand, the connecting with all of the right people within the industry, gaining those relationships, building a business that feels and flows as it should to really support you in every single area of your life, to find the autonomy of being able to work wherever you want in the world and to connect with that person that truly deeply needs to hear your voice, your story, and all of the tools that you have to offer. Because wherever you are, whether you are healing, whether you are recovering, whether you have been down the valleys, up the hills, you have so much to share. And I'm here to remind you of that. So anyways, the group program, yes, 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 yes. It's 3 meetings a month and then a one-on-one meeting a month. So you're getting that one-on-one sense, but you're also getting the group. You're also getting that support and that foundation. And so it's really this combination of one-on-one mentorship with the group mentorship, so we can just have this amazing tribe of women surrounding and supporting us, because that is what is needed. It is what is necessary. And it has been such a game changer in my own life to have those people. So I really just want to cultivate that community for you. And so if this feels good to you, if your body is buzzing with energy, if you are the slightest bit interested, again, head to the show notes, because the show notes has all of the information you need to apply for the program. And I'm doing calls all through the next few weeks because the program launches at the end of April. Are you in? I sure hope so. Head to the show notes and let's talk more. I'm so excited for it. Again, this is the work that I'm meant to do. And if you feel like you are ready to step into the work that you are meant to do, then let's do this. It's all about elevation, acceleration, and doing the damn thing. Okay, you guys, let's jump into today's episode with Thane Marcus. So Thane Marcus Ringler is a former pro golfer turned writer, speaker, coach, and entrepreneur living in LA. So when Thane reached out to me, I was super intrigued to get him on because honestly, one of my ex-boyfriends from high school was going to be a pro golfer. And so it was just really interesting to hear how Thane truly alchemized his experience as a pro golfer and turned it into something that was really meaningful afterwards. I feel like a lot of athletes put their sense of who they are in their sport, and to see him thrive and grow after the sport is just really cool. You know, after competing for nearly 4 years as a professional, he transitioned out of the world of golf and is now writing a book. He's an author, he is a speaker, he's a coach, and he's just an awesome human being. And he's really passionate about speaking to the journey of really stepping into your own and empowering our generation to take ownership of their lives and never settle for less than they are capable of. He also has an awesome podcast called The Up and Comers Show, which is all about learning how to live the good life. So I really like that. So in this episode, we talk about a ton of stuff on the topic of personal development. We talk about the path to mastery, which is awesome to hear from a professional golfer, and really the big picture perspective of personal development. We talk a ton about self-awareness and understanding the process and the journey and how to really be grateful for every step of the way, as well as our fears, the real role of failure, and what I thought was really interesting, the impact of sports on childhood development. I don't know about you guys, but I definitely played club softball and club soccer throughout my youth, and it was interesting to have such a big role in my life and, you know, what happened afterwards. I think you guys probably know what happened afterwards. It was a lot of marijuana. Don't judge me on that. Anyways, we also talk about the discipline of saying no to say yes, which was such a powerful just note to have or bookmark to have on my own life. And I talked about this a little bit in my solo episode last week, how saying no to certain things is really saying yes to things that are in greater alignment with where you are going, where you're moving towards. So it's really an important conversation to have because it's all about integrity and being in alignment with our goals and our dreams. Finally, and this was a really powerful part of the conversation, we talk a lot about faith and religion and the role of faith within our own personal lives and just how important it is to have faith, whether it is in religion or just non-denominational spirituality. It's just so important, you guys. And I know that this conversation might be triggering for some, but ultimately, I think that you can open your mind and just hear what faith looks like from so many different perspectives, because I know Thane and I both have slightly different perspectives, and I'm sure that you have a slightly different perspective than we do as well. And so it's just really good to have these conversations, to be open, because that's what inclusivity and making wellness, making all of this accessible really means. So I'm really looking forward to hearing your guys' thoughts on this episode, and I truly hope that you are able to get a couple nuggets of wisdom out of it. As always, if you are listening, please let us know. Tag the podcast at The Alchemized Life and Thane at Thane Marcus. And leave us a review. Subscribe, rate 5 stars all the time, all day, every day. And let us know what you think about the podcast through iTunes. Every review helps and is very important in just getting these people and these incredible messages out to even more people so we can, again, make wellness accessible to the world. All right, you guys, again, everything that you need is going to be in the show notes, whether you want to apply for the group mentorship program or learn a little bit more about Thane and his book and everything that he's doing. So head there and enjoy the episode. So we're already recording. I just hit record.
Yes. So,
Thane, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having
all
me.
Of my listeners, please tell us who you are and what you're doing.
Yes. So my current tagline is speaker, writer, coach, and entrepreneur. So a lot of fancy words. I'm really thankful for where the last year and a half has brought me. I was playing golf my whole life and could never have imagined doing the things I'm doing today, but that's kind of how life works. And so really my first book launched this last November. And so just been doing a lot for pushing that out and now speaking more and trying to empower others. And typically I the main topic that I'm writing towards and speaking towards and even coaching with is about development, how to, you know, move from here to there, how to get from point A to point B, how to move from where we are now to where we want to be. And it's a process that we're all in, regardless of where we're at in life and regardless of whether we're conscious or we recognize that. Mm-hmm. So it's been really fun because in golf, all of that focus was on myself. It was on how can I make myself and my performance better. And now I get to take that and put it onto others, which is way more fulfilling.
Yeah, absolutely. So when did you start playing golf?
A long time ago. When I was 3 or 4.
Wow.
My dad got me a club in my hand and we were in the backyard swinging it in the grass. And I loved it. It was fun being outside. It was fun being with my dad and being active. And I guess I had a natural swing or a natural knack for it. So it it was a lot of fun. I think I have so many fond memories of those years, and seeing some videos, you know, from the parents. Those were always fun to watch. And I was just always a competitor, so I loved competing, whether it be golf or basketball or ping pong, you name it. And that I definitely got from my dad as well.
Yeah. So when did you start playing professional golf then?
So after I went to a college out here called the Masters University, I played for 4 years for them. And then during between my junior and senior year of college, I wanted to make the decision of whether or not I would pursue professional golf. Mm-hmm. So that if I was my senior year, I could prepare for that. And so after praying about it and seeking counsel and trying to think through it well, it became clear it was a good option, and it could be a successful option. So my senior year of college, I spent most of the year putting together a business plan, working with my grandpa, who's a really well-established businessman, on the right model and structure for it, which was challenging because the golf world and the business world don't see risk the same way. So, yeah. So working with him on that. And then when I graduated, God had already blessed me with 10 to 11 sponsors. So I'd already pitched it to friends, family, other acquaintances, or people that could be interested in investing into this pursuit. And so I was able to turn professional right after graduating college and just start competing the summer of 2014.
Wow.
Yeah.
What does investing look like?
So it's a very non-traditional investment, right? So when I was pitching it to people, I'm saying, look, if you want to make money, don't invest in me because you have better chances in the stock market. That's just the reality. But if you want to join in this journey, to participate in helping me pursue this dream and be a part of the team to make that happen and potentially get a return on your investment, then this could be a good option. So usually you divide it up into, it depends. I mean, a lot of guys will do different things. So most golfers that do it will go for the country club handshake, as I call it, which is basically going to a rich guy at your country club saying, hey, give me money to pursue this and I'll double your money if I make it. And that's kind of the country club handshake. I wanted to be a little bit more business and professional with it. And that was my background and my degree. So it was good training just in general. So we did it where they invest in units, and a unit is $5,000 a year. And then they get a percentage of revenue that year, and then they get a royalty percentage for 10 years. Mm-hmm. And so that creates a long-term relationship. And ultimately, if I would have made it to the PGA Tour, they would have been greater rewarded financially than otherwise. So
Whoa.
It was kind of a cool structure.
That's so interesting. Yeah. I had no idea. That's pretty cool, huh? So you seem to have been like pretty self-aware throughout this entire process. When I was that old, I was not that self-aware at all. And we're the same age. So totally. I was on a totally different trajectory than you. would you say that you had that self-awareness throughout high school and growing up? And would it tie back to golf and being a professional athlete?
It's a good question. And I mean, I wouldn't give myself too much credit. I think we all grow in self-awareness at different rates and places. But I mean, all of us in college are pretty... we can be pretty ignorant. So,
yeah, true.
You know, I think the beauty of golf is that it is a great arena for personal development, and it is a great arena for self-awareness because you get constant feedback on how you're doing and your results, and like moment to moment, shot by shot, what thought affected what result and how you can change that. So you really are forced, the higher up you get in golf and the more in-depth you get into the game, you're forced to really understand yourself more and more because it's a battle against yourself and your mind more than it is against anyone else. Mm-hmm. And so I think golf is just a natural stimulant or arena for development in self-awareness. And I think that's probably the number one, reason why I did have probably higher than average level of self-awareness. And then playing professionally just amplified that times 10, because not only now is it a hobby and a thing I'm pursuing athletically, it's now my job, right? When your job is to perform, you can't leave any stone unturned in figuring out how to optimize your performance. And it's a lot of grueling work, right? But the fruit is seen through those intangibles like self-awareness that now I'm so grateful for, but in the moment is so hard to fight for.
Yeah. Would you say you can remember the exact moment when you
figured out that your mindset and potentially having a negative mindset towards the sport was affecting your performance?
Oh man, so many. I mean, there's so many, like, this is something we learn over and over again, right? Because we have to remind ourselves of it because we forget. We're very forgetful humans. I think there's several, like, pillars I can look back on and remember. I mean, early on, I think my dad was a great stimulant for this. When I was a kid, the thing that he just ingrained in my head so much, we grew up in Kansas, so it was a windy place. And wind and golf are not, they don't mix very well, right? It's not very fun when it's blowing 40 miles an hour and you're trying to hit a golf ball. It wreaks havoc on it. But he would always say, son, the wind is your friend. The wind is your friend. And really what he's saying is, like, look, embrace opposition because you're not going to be able to change it. So might as well embrace it as your friend. And just that was an early kind of seed planted. And then throughout high school, I had a great high school coach who, more than most high school coaches, are just glorified, you know, overseers. But my high school coach, Charlie Pierce, he put together a sheet before every tournament with one sentence or two sentences giving you feedback on strategy for each hole that you're about to play. And what that was saying is, look, like, golf is more than just hitting a ball. It's actually thinking about what you're doing, having a plan for it. So that was a seed planted of the development. And then in college, my college coach, Jason Semmelsberger, was a really great mentor and guide. And he really just exploded my perspective of what went on in the game of golf and uncovered the layers of complexity and all that goes on in the strategy, not only on the course, but in your mind. And so I think he was a great amplifier of it. But then throughout college and then throughout my professional career, I mean, you uncover more and more layers to that. And I think one of the pillars that really stood out to me was in college, getting to a place where you get frustrated by your results because you feel like you're always dissatisfied and there's people beating you that shouldn't be beating you. And the question was why. And so through some journaling time, I was able to classify all of my mistakes into three categories. It was mistakes from lack of preparation, not being prepared to hit a good shot. Mistakes from bad decisions, so choosing the wrong path. And then the third is mistakes from lack of confidence. And I realized, like, if I could eliminate all of the mistakes in those categories or as much as possible, then whatever the results were, I could be happy with. Because I can't control the outcome. I can control my effort and my intention and my confidence and my preparation. And so so that was kind of a great, I think that was a great leap forward in understanding what I need to be aware of and what I'm in control of and being okay with what I'm not in control of. So that was a really big, I think, realization that came in college.
It sounds like those three areas are something that you can now work with your clients too.
Totally. Yeah. It's amazing. Like, again, never would have planned on using that beyond the game of golf, but it has such wide applications.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's so beautiful about something like a sport or a performing arts or anything that we do growing up as a kid. It provides a space for us to learn about life. Because when you have parents that say, you know, look, this is what life's like, or you have teachers say, this is how life goes, you don't want to listen. We're kids, you know? We're like, I don't want you to tell me what life's about or how to live life.
I already know.
Yeah, yeah. But if you put it in the wrapper or the present of a sport or in performing art, something that we actually want to do, then we'll listen. And so that's the beauty of sports and these performing arts or different avenues, is that it cages life principles in a way that we can actually receive. And sports is such a great example of that, like golf. So you're 100% right. I use it a lot because, yeah, like, at the end of the day, we have to be concerned with the process and not fully the results, because we can't ever determine or dictate the results, even though sometimes we think we can, right?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Where did speaker, coach, author come from then? What was that process like of, you know, discovering this passion of yours and this way in which you can serve people from your experience?
It was definitely a journey. It was a voyage, right? It wasn't like light bulb, this is what I'm doing. I when I at the end of my professional career, the last year and a half, I faced a muscle strain in my back that repeated 5 different times over a year and a half. And it was golf specific. And so it was a lot of uncertainty in a really hard season of not knowing whether I'd be able to play pain-free golf again or return to a career again or even how to solve the problem. And through that time, God really kind of diversified my interests. That's when I started the podcast, The Up and Comer Show. That's when I kind of had the seed for the book planted. And it just made me more reflective, I think, in general. So when it came time to reevaluate, my initial business plan was for 3 years and then reevaluate with my investors and team. And so when it became at the end of 3.5 years to reevaluate, I committed to 2 months of not deciding. So I committed to space to allow me to think through fully the decision because it's a big decision. And in that time, the big question was, who have you been created, equipped, and called to be? And through reflection, through prayer, meditation, counsel, and just, you know, dreaming about it, it became clear that I could be more effective outside of the world of golf than within it. Just because of the way that I've been wired, the interests I have, and the gifts God's given me. And so through that, I think one of the calls was just to be a voice. Like, I really felt like being a voice was something that I was being led towards. So I knew that that was a part of it. I just didn't know what that looked like. But in the midst of that, I had already started writing my book. And so I knew I wanted to finish the book through. And then coaching became something that was like, okay, what can I do to add value to people now while I finish this book? Mm-hmm. And my brother-in-law was became an executive coach about 6 months before that time. And so learning some more about the work through him and what he was doing made me really intrigued. And I guess what I decided to do was I targeted about 5 to 6 friends who I thought could benefit from something like that, and just said, hey, look, this is what I'm trying to build. This is what I'm trying to do. I don't know what it looks like yet, but I would love to walk alongside you and try to add value and benefit and figure out where the value and benefit is and what this actually looks like. So I did that for about 4 to 5 months. And once I saw that there was tangible value, there was real benefit, and I was really skilled in it and could make it a career opportunity, that's when I decided to actually lean into it as a job, right? And so it's less about a moment where I made a decision, more about a series of becoming, right? A series of steps that lead you to where you are now, and they'll continue to lead you forward. And it's never a clear, full picture. Usually it's a partial image. And that's the beauty of this quote in Anne Lamott's book, Bird by Bird. She quotes this guy, E.L. Doctorow, and he said that writing a novel is like driving a car at night. You can only see as far as your headlights, but you can make the whole trip that way.
You guys, you know I love Bali. I was there for almost 2 weeks, but oh my goodness, it is so hot and humid. I love the weather, but the boob and pit sweat is real. I actually didn't think I could sweat that much. And I realized that last year at this time when I was in Bali, I was still using deodorant with antiperspirant, which is aluminum. So I legit wasn't sweating as much. Is that TMI? Never. Okay, so real talk. It took a while for my pits to detox after switching from the antiperspirant. But now that they have, I will never go back to that stuff. I found out recently that aluminum may be linked to breast cancer and Alzheimer's, and it can clog the lymph nodes in your underarms, so I am so glad to be using native deodorant. You might have seen my IG post a few weeks ago, and if you didn't, I freaking love this stuff and know so many of you do too. So their deodorant is made with super simple ingredients and aluminum and paraben-free. The scents actually work and smell fragrant. Even Corey uses their citrus and herbal musk scent, and I'm sure those of you with partners know it took me forever to find a deodorant that was fiancé approved. I love all of their products because they are so high quality. I even stuck one of their new bar soaps in my travel pack for Bali, and it made me feel like I was at home. Outside of the deodorant, they have body wash, bar soap, and charcoal toothpaste, all made with clean ingredients and free of aluminum and parabens. If you've never tried Native, you have to get on the bandwagon because this brand is for real a staple in my clean routine.
Plus, they have over 7,000 five-star reviews, so they must be doing something right. If you're looking for a recommendation, I love the citrus and herbal musk. It's super yummy, kind of like that spray your pillow with his cologne smell. Or for a more feminine scent, I love the lavender and rose because it's not overpowering at all. Okay, so again, if you didn't see my Instagram post, I'm so excited to be sharing the same offer with my Alchemized Life audience. To take 20% off your first purchase, visit nativedeodorant.com and use promo code ALCHEMIZED during checkout. Again, that's 20% off your first purchase when you visit nativedeodorant.com and use ALCHEMIZED at checkout. It's linked in the show notes for easy access too. Enjoy! It sounds like you had a pretty kind of like you said, step by step, which is really good. But I know that fears come up along the way, especially if you only are seeing a partial view. Yeah. So how do you deal with those fears? Like for a lot of people that are listening are going through times of transformation, and there's a lot of fears that come up, some that are rational, some that are irrational. So what was that process like for you?
It's huge. I mean, I have a whole chapter in my book dedicated to fear because it's massive. So I think one of the scariest things for any of us is the fear of failure. And I think at the root of the fear of failure is an irrationality that's related to our identity. So a fear of failure is saying that if I fail at what I'm doing, then I am a failure, right? And that's saying that our identity isn't what we do, when that's never the case. Our identity is not what we do, it's who we are. And there's a big difference there, but we blur those lines. So if I can have my identity as who I am versus what I do, then it doesn't matter what I do specifically, because that gives me the freedom, right? It doesn't change who I am. And so I think that's a really important thing for us to recognize and own, and that gives us the freedom to break the bonds of this fear of failure that's so irrational. And if there's exercises you can do to help you, right? Fear setting is a great one where you say, okay, I have this fear, let's just play it out. Worst case scenario, everything imaginable that's bad happens to the nth degree. Where am I? You paint that picture, this all happens, here I am, can I live with that? Great, okay. So my worst fear isn't really as fearful as I thought, because I just thought through the whole reality and I would still be alive, I'd still be breathing, I could still do this or that. Great, now we can move forward kind of defacing that fear and saying that's, if that happens, okay, I can deal with it, right? So that's a great exercise. But I think at the end of the day, that understanding that the fear of failure is irrational, and understanding that it's also a fear of dead ends, and saying that if I go, for me, I played golf, right? I played golf my whole life and it ended up as a failure. I didn't reach my goal. I didn't reach the PGA Tour. I wasn't a successful professional golfer. And now I've built a career off failure. Can you believe that? Like, that's crazy, right? Yeah. But the reality is we never hit a dead end. And if we do hit a supposed dead end, right, we don't have to start from the beginning again. And that's the fear around it, is that we have to go all the way back to the beginning and start over. And that's never the case, because if you pursue whatever it is you're pursuing to the best of your ability, whether or not that succeeds, it's going to prepare you for what's next, whether it's in that field or in a different field. So for me in golf, once I reached that end point, that dead end, I was able to take a few steps back, pivot, pick a new trajectory, and move forward with all the ground I had already gained and the experience I'd already gained and the skill sets I already gained, because I had done that well and put forth my best effort to do that well. And that frees us up again to just lean into wherever we're at, because we know it, just doing it faithfully will equip us for what's next. We don't have to know whether this will actually work out. We just have to be faithful to do our best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting, because I was just listening to a book on the way over here, and the chapter was obstacles are opportunities in the right direction. And so that totally resonates with me, because it's true. When we hit obstacles, that does not mean that we have to start over. It just means that we have to redirect our path. And I think so many of us get trapped in this fear of failure without thinking about how many skills we can learn along the way and how we can utilize those skills in so many different ways. Like, perfect example, I was working a corporate job for 6 years, learned so many skills about digital marketing. I had to quit my job because I was miserable and my body was deteriorating in front of me. So in that case, I would, I guess, considered a failure in the corporate world. But now, launching my podcast, having a brand online, having my own blog. You know, I am well equipped to be able to do all of that because of the skills that I learned throughout that time when I was working my job. So it's so multi-layered when we look at fear. But ultimately, what I always tell people is that if you get scared, that's okay, that's natural. But if you let fear stop you, that's a tragedy.
So true. And another great quote on that is that I think Grant Fraser said that life is full of obstacle illusions, which is a fun play on words, but it's true, right? Because they're either obstacles or opportunities. And really, like, we can reframe that always to say, look, an obstacle is actually an opportunity for growth. And we don't get stronger by easy things. We get stronger by hard things. We get stronger from opposition. And we get stronger by accomplishing or pushing past our perceived limitations. And look, fear's a natural part of life, right? Like you said, it's always going to be there. So we have to figure out how to best use it to our advantage, because it's actually a blessing. That fear response is heightening our body's ability naturally. So the best performers, the best athletes, the best you name it, they still have that fear response, but they actually use it to their benefit, not their detriment. They utilize it. Like it's like a turbo boost. So, yeah. And that's what helping, I think our whole lives, we're going to have to work on recognizing the lie in fear and replacing that lie with truth. And that's always going to be the process. It's going to repeat itself. It's going to look different in different stages of life. But we just got to get good at the process, because it's not going to end. It's not going to leave.
Yeah. How do you discern the lie from the truth?
I think it helps with just doing a bunch of different practices, right? So like sitting with it, journaling about it, having other people help you with objectivity, because it's very hard to get objective on our own. Mm-hmm. So having outside sources to be helping you see objectively. I think those are the best ways. But I think we get better at it with practice. Yeah. So I think we have to practice that. And the hard part isn't necessarily always recognizing the lie. It's in believing the truth. Mm-hmm. So we recognize the lie, replace it with truth. That's the preaching of the truth. But believing the truth is actually acting on it.
Yeah.
And that's where it gets really hard, right? It's saying, look, I'm telling myself truth, but whether I believe it or not is whether I act on it or not. Because if you don't act on what you believe, do you really believe it? You don't, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's where it gets tough.
How was the process of working with those five friends, or however many friends it was, over the span of months? Because I know that you focus on development. So mm-hmm. What does that look like?
Yeah, it was really neat, because it was kind of a discovery process, right? It's like, what is helpful? And how did I walk through this for myself? Because really what it was is like, I did this for myself in golf for 3+ years as a professional, because that was my job. And so what did I actually do? Because I'm like, I just did it naturally. So what did I actually do? And how can I take that to others? And so it's a process of discovery. And really what's come from that is kind of a process that by no means am I like the only one who does this, but it was just what I developed that's in line, I'm sure, with many others and most people that work in development spaces. But I call it coaching, consulting, creating, and that's why it's branded under collaboration. And so it's getting clear about the vision, getting clear about your why, where you're heading, and what your real heart's desires are and goals before you are, and just getting them out into the world on paper in a conversation, and sitting with yourself long enough, which is tough for people, for all of us nowadays, to really be real and honest about what you want to do in life, which is not natural. The consulting phase is saying, okay, in light of that, we want to get there. And we talk, all phases can take several conversations, if not multiple, depending on how much there is to unpack. The consulting phase moves more to current life. It's like, okay, we've seen the vision, we've seen the why, where we're heading, and what we want to accomplish or what we want to pursue in the world. Now we need to take a look at everyday life, and where are we gaining time? Where are we losing time? Where are we operating in alignment? Where are we misaligned? Where are we wasting time? Where should we be saying no more? And where can we instill disciplines, habits, and ways to optimize our current life to actually accomplish those goals? And then the creating phase is saying, okay, now that we've recognized reality, we started implementing new frameworks or disciplines or habits, what is the strategic game plan that we can co-create to best accomplish the vision in the least amount of steps possible, right? Mm-hmm. And that's a really fun process too. And then depending on the, I call them teammates instead of climates, because that's really what it is, a teammate.
Yeah.
So depending on the teammate and what they want, some people, I've worked with a guy for over a year now, and it's just a consistent, every other week, we're reconnecting, we're realigning the vision, and then we're holding him accountable to where he's going and the steps he's taking. And that's really helpful for some people. Some people, you know, it could be just a 2-month collaboration and then they're good to go. Like the goal for me is to empower them so that I work myself out of a job. But some people just like that extra accountability and objectivity, and that is really helpful, you know? So, it kind of depends on the client, but, or the teammate, but, it's been a really fun process.
Yeah, I absolutely love it. When I'm mentoring my girls, I can say it's a sisterhood.
Yeah.
So I totally understand. And it's just beautiful to see the different levels that they're at and watch them move through this stage of becoming empowered. So I totally resonate with all the work that you're doing. You mentioned through the consulting phase, it's like understanding what's in alignment versus what's in out of alignment. How do you discern that?
I would say that... that's why the first stage is so important, because usually what we think our vision is isn't always accurate. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the work in the coaching phase is to say, okay, you take a shot at what the vision is and like, okay, cool, you got that out on paper. Now what's like underneath that? Because there's layers to what we actually want to do in life and why. And usually we have ideas about what we want to do, but we don't necessarily know why. And then we figure out why, and there's actually something else we want to do on top of that. Mm-hmm. And so I think the real work is in that phase of really uncovering like what's at the heart, what's at the core, and why it's there. Because once that's in place, getting things aligned with it is a lot more natural or intuitive. Like it's an easier process to accomplish, but it is in tandem. Like it's a team effort, meaning, look, my job here isn't to like preach and tell you everything. It's to uncover from you what's truly there. And it's more of a dance, right? It's a guiding, instructive dance. And so in that alignment, it's really just, and again, I think the other thing is the flexibility side, right? So understanding that there in life, our perspectives and our desires and visions change. And that's a good thing, right? That's growth. And we can't expect to have a full picture where we are now. And that's why I opened my book with a quote from Muhammad Ali. He said, "The man who views his life the same at 50 as he did at 20 wasted 30 years of his life." Mm. And that's the point. Like, we want to create a vision that's compelling, that's powerful, that's worth pursuing. But we also want to understand that our perspectives and our desires change as we grow through life, and that's a blessing too. So there's flexibility. It's not saying that because I put this on paper, because I've communicated this, because I'm pushing towards it, means that I have to keep that for the next year.
Yeah.
It'll change. That's great. And as it changes, then we can realign with that new vision, that new trajectory where needed, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a constant process in a lot of ways. But I think the most important part is empowering and equipping them to be able to do that on their own. And that goes back to the self-awareness piece that you brought up, because there's a great quote by this guy, Chris Hertz. He said that in order to, you have to be able to self-observe if you're going to self-correct. And so being able to self-observe clearly helps us self-correct. And that's what the empowerment is, enabling them the tools to really examine reality on their own, self-observe, and then understand what truth they need to preach and how to believe it.
Yeah. So, cause I feel like there's so many times when I will be like super self-aware and then I'll get into this funk and I'm like, well, how do I get out of the funk? So how do you get out of the funk if you're ever in it?
Oh yeah. Well, we're all in it all, you know, throughout life. I mean, let's be honest. It's hills and valleys always. So for me, it's a lot of reframing. The thing to understand with all this is we get better with practice always. And we're going to have a lot of practice in life. So non-negotiables for me are bookends of the day. So starting and ending my day with morning and evening routines that are intentional and disciplined.
What does that look like?
Yeah, so I think the evening is what sets up the morning. And so the evening is really needs to be intentional as well. Like last night was not intentional. And so with my roommate, his girlfriend was over and we were planning for this party we're hosting and ended up getting like 4.5 hours of sleep. And I was frustrated myself because that sets off a chain of events for the next couple days, but that's life, right? Life is not ideal. But typically 90%+ of the time it's, committing to a bedtime that will set me up for success based on the amount of sleep, because sleep should be a non-negotiable. It's the thing that can make the biggest compounding benefit in all areas of our life. And on average, we need 7 to 9 hours like throughout all of humanity. And if you don't need that much, you're a part of less than the 1%. So you're not a part of it. If you're listening, like none of us are a part of it, likely. Like the chances are you aren't. So 7 to 9 hours, that's so countercultural. So we have to fight that much harder to have it. Mm-hmm. But that sets everything else up for success. It has, I mean, I could go on and on about this because as a professional athlete, I got really familiar and I got to see up close and personal the effects of it because my job was my performance. And so when I wasn't getting enough sleep or recovery, not only was my physical game affected, my mental game was affected. I wasn't able to focus and concentrate as much, but I also wasn't able to be as confident. And I also wasn't able to have the touch around the greens or pull off the shots I normally do because it has drastic effects. But over time we kind of numb ourselves to it. Mm-hmm. So sleep is massive. So I usually commit to a time when I want to get to bed to set me up for success based on the amount of sleep I need to get. I'll do no screens for an hour before bed or blue light blocking glasses. I'll do turning phone on airplane mode. I'll unplug the Wi-Fi here. And then I'll decompress my spine. Get
what does that look like?
Foam roller.
Okay.
I've got a vibrating foam roller.
Ooh,
and then, yeah,
fun.
So good. So just like decompressing the spine, like rolling, you know, it's actually really helpful. And then I will, I have a great alarm clock called Lumi. That's a natural sunrise, sunset. It's amazing. Definitely would recommend it. So I set my alarm and I put the light on and it'll naturally fade. And then I'll read the Bible, 5-10 minutes and then pray and the sun will fade and then I'll go to bed. And then in the morning, it wakes me up, you know, sometimes just the light, which is nice. It's a 30-minute you know, natural sunrise and then the alarm goes off. And then I'll get ready, I'll kneel and pray and then I'll do usually, depending on if I'm working out or not. Right now I'm working out at, I'm doing 5:30 a.m. workouts with my buddy.
Okay.
So I'm up at 4:50 and in the gym.
The sun's not up then.
No. This morning was like a 4.5 hour sleep, but you know, we had to get it in. So I get back here. I kind of have a ritual. I shower. I do a cold shower. Cold shower is another thing we can talk about, but anyways. Shower, get ready. Coffee ritual. I love coffee.
You're a great coffee maker, by the way. The whole process was very meditative.
Yeah, it's a ritual. It's really cool. And then I turn on worship music and spend time with Jesus and God and read the Bible again. And then I like to make time for reading outside of that too. So if I have some books and I have a little space, I'll spend 20-30 minutes reading. And then I'll dive in. And that's no phone on all that or email or anything. So typically I'm not doing text or phone or email till 8, but sometimes that can wiggle depending on the needs. But those bookends set everything else mm-hmm. up for failure or success. If I can be intentional and commit to those, everything between can be set up for success. So I think that is such an important piece for anyone is curating or having intention behind how you start and end your day is what will help facilitate everything else between.
Okay, my friends, I've recently gotten into subscription boxes. I never really was because the first few boxes I received were all trial size products that made me feel like I was essentially paying for those little samples you get at the mall for free.
But this past year, I've started doing my due diligence and researching subscriptions because convenience is necessary and it pushes me to get things I wouldn't normally buy for myself and explore new brands. Anyways, I already know that you guys know FabFitFun. Honestly, there is a reason why there is so much talk about FabFitFun, and it is because they are amazing. I recently started using them and had to get them on the podcast because I was in shock when I received my first box. Literally, picture my mom and I huddled around a package, oohing and aahing over all of the goodies. And it's not just goodies, it's full-size goodies. I got a new Swell water bottle, the Whey leave-in conditioner, an essential oil diffuser and scents from Unplug Meditation. Altogether, the box was worth over $200. It only cost $49.99. I feel like the water bottle alone cost that much, so I am a very happy camper. Like I said, my mom and I were obsessed with the box. It's like the perfect care package for yourself or your girlfriend, and rather than being a monthly subscription, it's seasonal, so you're getting it 4 times a year. I feel like that's the perfect amount of surprise gifts, not too excessive, but enough to keep you well stocked throughout the year. So if you want to join me and my mama on our seasonal treats from FabFitFun, I have a code that you can use to sign up today. And these boxes always sell out, so definitely go check them out. I mean, I'm totally hooked after receiving the spring box. You can use my code ALCHEMIZE to get $10 off of your first box. So just go to FabFitFun.com to sign up and use the promo code ALCHEMIZE to get $10 off of your first box. That's over $200 for only $39.99. Again, go to FabFitFun.com and use my code ALCHEMIZE to get $10 off your first FabFitFun box. You can thank me later.
So I want to talk to you about faith, because a lot of people have either grown up in houses that are very faith heavy and really, you know, rely on their relationship to God. And then there's other families and households that have kind of the opposite view. So how can somebody that has had either a weird relationship or just hasn't grown up in a house that has really strengthened their faith call on faith, even if it's secular, to allow them, you know, space within this process to really be able to trust in divine, trust in the universe, trust in God, to move along their path and kind of surrender to, you know, the how of it all? And, you know,
I think it's a great question and very fair, because especially in America, it's an under-spiritualized culture, right? So we're very scientific, which again, science is awesome. Like, I don't have anything against science, but the emphasis of science de-emphasizes spirituality just because it's putting intellect or information to our experiences to help us better understand it intellectually, not necessarily experientially. And so I don't think it's an either or, it's a both and, right? And so... So for people, I think the first thing is just to be real with yourself, and to think about where your truth or information is coming from, because at the end of the day, we're all way more influenced by culture than we would like to admit. I mean, from something that I've really realized is, like, I am who I am today because I've lived in California for 8 years. That's the power of culture. Like, my friends in Kansas I grew up with are way different than me now. Because I've lived here for 8 years and I have a different perspective on things than they do. Now, is that right or wrong? It's not. It's different, right? It's not to say one's better than the other. It's just different realities. And I can't assume onto them the way I see or think about the world because it's been impressed on me by the culture. And so I think for people thinking about faith or spirituality or getting real with themselves looks like, okay, what messages or what influence are you listening to? And should you? And that's an open question. Should you listen to that influence, right? That cultural or what, you know, relational influence that's informing the way you think about those things? And does it match up with your actual lived experience? So I think that's a big part of it. Because I truly believe if we're all honest with ourselves, if we separate ourselves from the culture and the messaging we hear, I truly believe we all have a hole in our heart, and this hole is the yearning for something more, that there's something beyond ourselves, there's some greater meaning to life than just life. And if we can be honest with ourselves and see if that's there, then it becomes, okay, then what, right? And for me, like, I believe, right, and this is where it differs depending on what you believe, but I believe that there is a God who's created everything. I mean, yeah, it's hard. I think that's a much easier thing to believe than to believe in the Big Bang or whatever it may be. Because when you look at the body and the way it works and just the intricacies of everything and how this planet works and how insane that we have life here. And I think there's so many layers to it. It's just like there has to, in my opinion, there has to be a God, you know? And so, and then when I read God's word, the Bible, it all makes sense. And it all adds up. And, you know, I've been reading it. I grew up in the church, so that's my background and my culture as well. But I claim to be a Christian ever since I was 11. I claim Christ, and not definitely like many years in there where I wasn't living what I believed. But I can honestly say now that not only do I intellectually believe it, but I experientially believe it. Mm-hmm. Like literally God and his word has changed me, and I'm a different person than I would be outside of him and his influence and his work in my life and my heart. And I can't explain it. Like I can't explain, you know, who he is and what God's word said, because I've studied it my whole life and it's a huge part of my life. But the reality is it's a supernatural thing and it's completely shaped who I am today. And I want that for others. And that's why I'm so passionate about it, because it's given me so much meaning and joy and hope in life. That's been such a blessing. So
yeah, thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to note too, and I kind of just want to share my experience, because I did not grow up in the church. Yeah. And for my high school experience and growing up, you know, I did not believe that there was a God, because there was so much wrong happening in my life. And I thought, well, how could there be someone that's supposed to be looking over all of us if all of this is happening to me? And it's through self-awareness, self-discovery, and, you know, really relying on faith and spirituality that I was able to pull myself out of that. I believe that there is something outside of us, and I fully trust in that. And I see that through the synchronicities in my life and how I've been guided. And even, it's so funny, even this past week, I was so stressed out at the beginning of the week and just had all of these negative thoughts running through my head, and my car kept manifesting these issues with it. And there, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday of this week, I had back-to-back-to-back appointments, and I was scrambling around LA. And every single day, a person would reschedule that helped my schedule to free up. You know, that's just, it's surrendering and like trusting and believing that you are being taken care of and you're being guided. You don't have to believe in God. You don't have to believe, you know, in any specific religion, but to have faith that that you are guided and that you are supported is such a powerful way to kind of just like let something else lead and know that you are not alone, know that you are supported. And that's been the most powerful thing to me through all of the hard times, is just to know that like, I'm not doing this alone. You know,
it's really comforting. Totally. And honestly, like I think it is just opening the eyes and seeing that, right? Cause if we don't open our eyes, we aren't going to see it. And so, you know, to be spiritual, you have to give yourself space to be spiritual, right? You have to actually look or listen to hear and see. And if you don't do either, then you probably won't, you know? And so, I think we can train ourselves either way. And I think like what the Bible talks about too is that the things that God has designed are like very opposing, right? So it's like there's God's sovereignty, which says he's in control of everything. And then there's man's responsibility that says he's responsible for his decision and has a free will. And you're like, okay, it can't be both. But God's like, yes. And you're like, wait a second. How does it, you know? So it's this beautiful tension that we have to live in. And that tension's called faith. It's saying, I can see partial and I experience partial, but I don't have full knowledge because I'm not God. So I'm going to walk forward by faith in who you say you are and who you say I am and trust you in that, right? That's that trust like you were talking about. And that's what God, even in all throughout the Bible, you know, is, and that's the thing I think for people listening is like, man, beyond what you believe or don't believe, like, the Bible is one of the most historical documents there is today. I feel like every human needs to read it at least once, just because of the historicity of it is just insane, you know? So, but in it, you know, you see over and over again, like, the things that he promises and that his word always is true in that. And that's the comfort, right? That's that hope that we have. And that's how we can have faith. It's not a blind faith. It's a faith saying, okay, like, I see it in your word. I see it in my life. And because of both the intellectual knowledge and the experiential knowledge, I trust and I'm walking by faith, even though it's not full knowledge, right? And right. It doesn't, now, just because it's simple in that sense doesn't make it easy. It never is easy, you know?
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, and I think on the path of personal development, you know, if you're coming from the space of rock bottom, you have to hold on to something. You can't just do it, like I said, you can't just do it alone. Yeah. You have to have something to hold on to. So I want to talk about your book. Yeah. It came out in November. How has it been? How was the writing experience like, and what is the response?
It has been a journey, man. It's been so cool. It was a year and a half in the making, which, you know, some people's like, that's really fast. Some people are like, that's really slow. I mean, writing a book's just all over the map timeline-wise. So I think just getting that book in my hand finally, and holding it after, you know, banging your head against the wall in so many different ways along the way, that was a really sweet experience, you know, and it's like climbing a mountain. It seems so insurmountable at first, and you just keep pushing forward, and you kind of lose sight of the peak because you just have to keep pushing, and you finally get there, and you're like, man, I can't believe I made it, you know, so that was a sweet experience, and then, yeah, getting to kind of go through what does it take to launch a book well. I've never done that before. And so what does it entail and how do you execute on it and what are all the layers and how do I not go crazy from decision fatigue, you know? So it's been really cool though, because I think the thing that's made it all worth it is hearing from people that they have been encouraged and that they have been challenged and better equipped by reading it. That's worth its weight in gold. You can't put a price tag on that. Yeah. So I've been really blessed by that opportunity.
Yeah, everyone, we're going to link it in the show notes so you can check it out and read it. It's available on
ThaneMarcus.com or Amazon or anywhere that you can get books, most likely.
Do you have an Audible version of it?
That I do not yet. Cool. So that's been on the queue. And, you know, it's when you're in places like us, right, we were talking about this beforehand, it's figuring out what makes sense and what you can afford to do or what is a good investment of time and resources, because it takes both. And I think, you know, last year I was very quick to invest in anything and everything just to support the cause. And now I'm in a season of much more like patient evaluation of like, before I actually commit to doing something, I want to make sure it's worth doing. I would love to make an audiobook, but it needs to be justified first, and it needs to line up with current commitments. So hopefully in the future.
Right on. Thane, thank you so much for coming on The Alchemized Life. So for everyone that is listening that wants to follow along with your journey, where can we find you?
ThaneMarcus.com is where I house everything. So that's, you know, speaking, coaching, links to the podcast, blog I do, and the books on there. So that's a great place. And then socials is at Thane Marcus. Instagram is probably the most popular or the one that I use the most. So yeah, would love to hear from you guys.
Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me. It's been fun.
You guys, how amazing was today's episode? I hope that there was at least one thing that you learned that you can take away and integrate into your life. I'm so grateful for you listening. And as always, you can head to the show notes to pick up any useful links or anything that was mentioned in today's episode. If you have the time, please take a moment to leave a review on iTunes, subscribe, and let us know that you are listening on Instagram by tagging @thealchemizedlife. I hope you enjoy the rest of your day, and I'll see you next week.